And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobble, and my co-host today, Carter Brantley. Carter, how are you doing, sir?
Doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It is a great day. Because it is not Saturday, and I no longer have to think about the atrocity that was the Florida Gators football team. And I can move on to the New England Patriots, who I am very excited about having a very big game today with your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's going to be a great one.
Yeah, it should be really fun. Kind of a strength-on-strength kind of thing. Like, that Bucs defense is playing pretty well. The Patriots offense is playing pretty well. Yeah, I'm excited for that game for sure. Drake May's great. You know, Baker's playing real well. So, yeah. So, if y'all want to hear more, go listen to the Bucs podcast, though. I'm not gonna give it away for free, you know what I mean?
And so. I'm sure all of you have already done so. But if you have not, now is the time, not now, after the show, for, and this is kind of perfect timing, because you can go, after this show completes, you can go do a little pregame for the Bucs game with the Bucs show. And if you want to know the easiest place to find all of that content, it's to follow us at RBLR Rays on all the socials. Go to youtube.com/RBLR Sports. Follow there, subscribe there, and that's also the best place for you to get involved in the conversation. We've got a jam-packed show here for all of you that have joined us this morning, and we're very glad to have you. Huge, maybe some of the biggest news we're going to see this offseason. Hopefully we see some more positive news later in the offseason, but one of the biggest decisions that had to be made for this 2026 roster has been made, and we're going to break it down. And so we appreciate all of you that are joining us, and we're going to get right into it, not going to beat around the bush. Pete Fairbanks, option declined by the Tampa Bay Rays. Carter, what were your immediate reactions when you saw that news?
Just kind of bummed, not really surprised or anything, because $11 million is a lot for a team like the Rays to pay for a reliever. It's not for an actual payroll baseball team to pay for a reliever. Like, he'll get signed somewhere for $9 to $11 million probably. I think the projections are like 2 years, $18 million, which is reasonable and not that far off from the option that they just would have picked up. So yeah, it's kind of a bummer. And if I had faith that money was going to be reinvested in other areas, then I wouldn't be, I'd be, oh, that makes sense. Like, you'd rather spend that $11 million on other things other than a reliever, like one single reliever. I totally get it. But for me, it's mostly just like, oh, well, this is just another cost-saving move, which, again, disappointing, but not really surprising. So, yeah, sad to see Pete go. He seemed like a fun dude. It was always fun to watch him go out there and do his thing. But, it is what it is. It comes with the territory of following the Rays, So kind of depressing, but at the same time, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Some context around the move. As you mentioned, he was due $11.5 million from the Rays in 2026, and they picked up his option. For some context, that would have made him the sixth highest paid reliever in Major League Baseball, currently salaried for 2026. So I do think that does, that does bring some context, because if you were to take a look at his statistics for 2025, you would see that he was a good closer. And a good closer has got experiences there. They're not easy to find. But he was 12th in saves. And if you look at his opportunities and how often he turned those opportunities into saves, it's right around the exact same spot in the leaderboard. It's in that 10 to 12 range where he was converting opportunities that were given to him. So it was not just that he didn't have the opportunities. He did have them. And when they did, he wasn't turning them in at the rate that other closures above him were, and it was right about in line. So he performed at about the 12th best closer in baseball last year, roughly speaking. And if you're curious, $9 to $8 million, like we were talking about, is right around the 11th highest paid reliever in baseball. So that seems to be a more, like, if we're just looking objectively at, his performance relative to his value, that seems what the market is saying for that level of closer. Now, that being said, getting a closer with experience, now 3 or 4 years of experience at the closing position, those guys do not grow on trees. So there's some value in the experience. There's some value in him being a part of the roster. The leadership of the Rays has said many times that they value continuity in the roster, in the bullpen, in the rotation, in the lineup. They value that continuity. So that does seem to, you know, from our perspective, I think it would be easy to bubble up that extra $2.5 million into continuity, into experience, into the reality of this guy being with the team for as long as he has. And I think it does kind of end up feeling like a bit of a bummer, especially because, and we'll get into this in a minute, there's not a like just flashing red sign, obvious candidate to replace him. So it leaves you just kind of feeling uncertain. And I think there's a really good chance if he signs for like less than $9 million, if he gets less than that, as his Rays fans are going to end up feeling pretty frustrated.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I didn't even necessarily view it entirely in terms of like closer specifically. It was more just like, well, there's another potential high leverage arm that the Rays don't have.
Sure.
But it was nice that he sort of had that role kind of carved out, like it was sort of his niche, like that ninth inning, like you said, the traditional closer, like that's very anti-Rays, right? Like it seems like they'd be more of a closer by committee type of team. But it was cool that they had that because it kind of allowed them to be super creative with their, you know, inning 6 through 8. You know, they were allowed to use kind of wherever mismatch, you know, doing whatever they wanted to do because they knew that Pete Fairbanks was going to be there in the ninth. The gap between him and like Jackson, Uceda and the rest was there, but it wasn't big enough to really warrant him being like the Josh Hader or like fill in the blank, whatever great fireman there is in the baseball right now. They didn't have to use him like that. They could just kind of use him as a closer. So yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'm like you said, just kind of a bummer, but yeah, cause this stuff is still pretty good. You know, like it's still there. He's still pumping 98. He's still got the outlier fastball and the death ball slider and the weird changeup that he threw like every now and then. So it's, you know, he was a fun pitcher and yeah, seemed like a nice guy too. So it's tough to see those types of fellas go out the door, but yeah, just the nature of it. That's what's going to come with following this team.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would say that he was like washed or anything. He certainly did not have as good a year this last year as he had in years past. And that's that's fair to say. However, he was still highly effective, like you said, and he was a sense of like continuity, a sense of, you know, consistency that you knew if you got to the ninth inning,
stability,
you know, close game, you knew Pete Fairbanks was coming in and you knew more often than not, he was going to get the job done. Sure. And I think that again, when you talk about, you know, the difference in maybe the amount that he was scheduled to get paid and what he may get on the open market, I think there's a lot of Rays fans, including, you know, myself, who would say that the difference there is worth it for those things that he brought. And again, there was always the option of going back to a more closer by committee role, which the Rays have done in years past, and using him in concert with a Griffin Jacks, with a Edwin Uceda, with a Garrett Clevenger. And that, you know, obviously is no longer an option with him no longer being on the roster. And so I guess that kind of leads into sort of the next question as we sort of unfortunately have to move on from the Pete Fairbanks era. And I will say just briefly, it's not impossible for them to bring him back on a deal. I think what, you know, for me makes it unlikely is that surely they could have worked out an extension or something and made it work if they really wanted to bring him back. But maybe they think that he won't get the value that he's looking for on the open market and hope to bring him back when he doesn't get what he wants on the free agent market and bring him back at a reduced amount. I don't know. I'm not a fly on the wall in the Eric Neander boardroom, so I don't know what those conversations are like, but it is possible. But in all likelihood, we're looking at a bullpen in 2026 that does not include Pete Fairbanks. So with that in mind, Carter, what do you think of the options currently available to replace him? And not just like who do you think could be the closer, but also is this also an opportunity for the Rays to maybe go back to closer by committee?
Yeah, I think that'll probably end up being what they do. Because like Jax is probably their best reliever. Like him, Uceda and Clevenger are the big three. And I think Jax is probably, I know he didn't perform very well at some points during the second, like once he got traded to the Rays, but sure, he has a proven track record and his stuff is ridiculous. So I think he's probably their best reliever at this point. I'm interested to see what Kevin Kelly does. You know, I know he was sent down and he had a really awful 2025. But you know, there's something there. Like, he had a really, really solid 2024. He showed some flashes of being a very good reliever. So, I'd love to see if he could bounce back a little bit, kind of regain that form. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not like mourning the loss of Pete Fairbanks necessarily as much as I'm just kind of like, like, this is just kind of the same old stuff, you know, just like getting rid of guys and just reducing payroll and all this stuff. It's just annoying, you know, it's just depressing. So, I think that they'll have more than enough options to replace him, more than enough options to still make this a viable bullpen. But, yeah, it's just a bummer to see a guy like that walk, because I don't think, I know you mentioned maybe bringing him back, and there's obviously that possibility, but, yeah, if a team lets me go for $11 million a year and then another team offers me a contract at least somewhat equivalent, like, I'm not going to go back to the team that just told me I wasn't worth it, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe there seemed to be in the quotes, Pete definitely seemed to be a little bit miffed. He kind of brought up like, oh, the new ownership, I guess it's instability or whatever, which, you know, I don't know. But regardless, yeah, I think the bullpen will be in good shape regardless.
Yeah, and I think that is sort of the good news for Rays fans, is that there are a lot of good arms out there. I think it's a little bit, you know, I think it's really going to go back to closer by committee. I don't think any of those guys, you know, are the caliber that I would just lock them in. But I also think that's kind of a space that Kevin Cash and the Rays management team and Kyle Snyder are, that's a space they're comfortable operating.
Yeah, they like it.
They've done in the past. It's something they're comfortable with. So I wouldn't be concerned about that. Obviously, it's also early in the offseason, so they could add other pieces around that. You know, we look at the Rule 5 draft coming up here in a couple of months, and there's places where they might, want to add. Can, like you said, can Kevin Kelly bounce back and kind of return to the form we had seen him before and be kind of a stabilizing middle of the bullpen force that then allows those other guys to kind of be in that eight to ninth inning bubble? That's the stuff that we're kind of, I think we're going to be looking at. And obviously, as the offseason goes further along, we'll be able to, you know, make more, inferences based on who they have and haven't added. That'll be kind of something to watch, especially going into spring training as well, as, you know, how are they handling this? And I'm sure, you know, there'll be some opportunity for media to ask Kevin Cash and Kyle Snyder and Eric Neander what their plans are for the closer position after moving off Pete. Because it, you know, it's definitely a significant move, and it'll kind of to sum up a little bit of what Pete has meant to this organization. He is currently third on the all-time leaderboard for saves in Rays uniform. He is only 11 behind the all-time leader, Roberto Hernandez. So, I mean, legitimately, if he had stayed one more year in the role that we expected him to be, he would probably have been the all-time saves leader for the Rays with one more season. And that's kind of a bummer because, you know, when you look at if you just go to the baseball reference page right now and you look at the leaders for basically every statistic, none of them are like current players. There's nobody yet. And we hope that, like, and Junior got really close. So he got really close to being one of those names in black on that leaderboard. But, you know, Brandon Lau's not going to hit enough home runs to top Longo. And there's nobody in the starting rotation that's going to challenge James Shields or David Price or any of those guys for some all-time statistics. And when we look at this era of Rays baseball, where we look at it from kind of the 2019 to 2020, three to 25 era of Rays baseball where we had some success. I think for me, it's just kind of a bummer that none of the guys who were a big part of that stick around long enough or able to produce, you know, consistently enough to really leave their mark in the record books for this team. There's several guys that we thought were going to, and just whether they moved on from the team or kind of, got hurt too much to produce at that level. Pete was kind of the guy that I thought might be the one to sort of stake his claim to raise history a little bit by getting that all-time saves record for the team. And it's just kind of a bummer to me that he won't get that opportunity most likely.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's kind of like it. It's weird, man. The Rays are just such a weird franchise. They've got, like, you know, like you said, they've got Longo and all those and some other guys on top of the leaderboards. But yeah, I don't know that they're, I don't know. It's going to take some changes to their philosophy and some changes to the way they do business for that to change, really. I don't know that we're ever going to reach a point where like they're like not even career Rays, but like more than 6 or 7 years long career Rays. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that we're going to get to that point again, just with the way things are and with the way that baseball operates and with the way the Rays operate. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Obviously they tried it with, that one dude, the shortstop that whose name we won't mention.
They sure.
And it didn't, you know, it, you know, can't account for that. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's definitely not super fun, but you know, they got to be cutthroat because we were talking about that $2 million that Pete might make more in free agency or whatever. Like that $2 million matters to the Rays. You know, that $2 million is something that they account for in their profit margins or whatever. And clearly that's, you know, that's a deal breaker for them. So, they're always winning on the margins. And, so this is part of that. So, you know, yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. What are you going to do? If you've got something you want to do and something you want to share with us, whether it's the thoughts around this move or the other moves we're going to discuss in a minute, because not all doom and gloom, the Rays did bring some guys back. Let us know over on YouTube in the comments is the easiest way to get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Love to hear your thoughts on these moves. The next move that we're going to discuss is interesting in the context of letting Pete Fairbanks go, and that is retaining Brandon Lau for $11.5 million and exercising his option for 2026. Were you surprised that the Rays exercised that option?
Yeah, 100%. I thought it was going to be flip-flop. I thought they might keep Pete and they'll definitely get rid of Brandon Lau. I thought it was a very real possibility they just let both of them go. Like, I thought that was the most likely scenario, frankly. Yeah, I don't know, man. Brandon Lau, you know, like he's going to hit. He's going to be a very solid contributor offensively. But he, unfortunately, was one of the worst second basemen in baseball last year, like defensively. And that sucks because, like, he at times has been, like, a solid enough second baseman to where his hitting made him an incredible player. Like,
yeah.
So it's kind of tough to see him kind of fall from that. He struggled a little bit with velocity this past season, but he made up for it and still had managed to have a very good offensive season. So, yeah, I don't know. I was a bit surprised by that. They've got Braden Taylor coming up through the wings, and he'll probably end up there at second, and he's great. But the trade of Curtis Meade, you know, I wonder how much that factors into this, because if they still had Curtis, do they view second base a little bit differently in that lens? I don't know. Probably not, because Curtis Meade hasn't really turned out to be who I thought he was in Chicago either. But yeah, I don't know. I was a bit surprised, but happy, you know, because Brandon Lau's great. He's going to provide some thump. He's fun to watch at the plate. So I was excited by it, and it gives them Braden Taylor a little bit more time to season in the minors before he comes up, because I think he'll be really good, but you know, he's still got some things to work on. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by the Brandon Lau move for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously known Brandon Lau enjoyer. Zach Dobb was happy that Brandon Lau was retained, obviously.
For sure.
I wasn't overly shocked by it, only because I think Braden Taylor, as much as we are excited about him, he took what I can only really describe as a step backwards in 2025, hitting to a 77 WRC plus in AA last year. So where in previous, you know, in the previous 2 years, he was, you know, averaging like a 140 WRC plus, you know, through low A and up into double A to be in a short set, about 30 games, was just lighting the world on fire. And then just was not really able to recreate that success in 2025. It's not something where we don't think he'll figure it out long term. We do think he will, but I do think it makes sense to keep Brandon Lau, because if you move on from Brandon Lau, your options at second base start to become a little bit more. There are some okay options for second base. You know, guys like Richie Palacios. That's an okay option for second base. And that would be fine, but he's also injury prone, which, you know, and of course, you know, Brandon is as well. And you could, you know, maybe also throw Jonathan Rhonda out there at second base. So there are some options out there, but clearly the Rays are comfortable leaving second base the way it is. And my theory as to why that is because I think that they saw Carson Williams' performance in 2025, and they were happy with it, but realized that he's not going to be a difference maker necessarily right away in 2025, at least. And you're going to need some offensive production from other guys. You know, you're obviously going to have Junior. You hope Aranda is, you know, fully back. He looked fully back in the last couple of games he returned from, so you hope he's great. You've got Yandy. So you've got a little core of power there and of offensive performance there. But when you look around the rest of the diamond, unfortunately, catcher is not probably going to produce. Shortstop is either Taylor Walls, who we'll get to him in a minute, but he's not producing with the bat. The outfield is one of the biggest question marks, maybe in like I can remember in recent years for the Rays. Just complete unknown. I have no sense for that right now. So you don't have a lot of, you know, real like locks to perform offensively. So moving on from Brandon Lau would really kind of put you under the eight ball to have some of those guys in the outfield work out, or have Richie Palacios stay healthy and perform with the way we've seen him perform in small sample sizes. I just think having, you know, leaving Brandon Lau out of the 2026 roster plans would have really put them behind the eight ball in a way that I just think they weren't comfortable with at the end of the day. And, you know, there's not a lot of great options out there on the free agent market to replace him that you would be able to get, you know, and for what it's worth, I mentioned the value kind of proposition as far as the salary relative, you know, to other performers with Pete. When it comes to Brandon Lau, obviously the defense hurts his WAR, but if you just look at his offensive numbers, he grades out as a top five second baseman in baseball.
Yeah.
And he's currently the eighth highest paid second baseman in Major League Baseball. He hit the most home runs of any second baseman in baseball last year. So obviously there's some value there for Brandon Lau. And the Rays felt comfortable with it. I think if Braden Taylor had performed better, we might see a different conversation. He didn't even make it up to AAA, so that you really can't make that jump with him. I think obviously if Curtis Mead was still with the org and was performing better, that was a conversation. But like you said, he went to the White Sox and just hasn't made an impact over there. And so that leaves them, I think, to bring Brandon back, which I think is the right decision. Because honestly, if you go into next season with only really Junior, Yandy, and Aranda as your, and even, you know, even Aranda and Junior have one really good season of MLB production. So that's it. That's your offensive core going into a season. That would be a little scary. So I think making Brandon made sense. Bringing back Brandon made sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense for, I hate to keep using this phrase, but regular baseball teams, it totally makes sense to bring back Brandon Lau. For the Rays, I thought that maybe they would deem it too rich for their blood. But luckily I was wrong. Like you said, there's a lot of questions about that corner, those corner outfield spots especially. And you know, if you're not certain that you're going to get offensive production out of those spots, because there's some talent there, you know, Christopher Morel and Josh Lowe could be there, and you know, they brought in that new guy from Cincinnati whose name
Fraley.
Fraley and the other fella. There could be some talent there, you know, but at the same time, if that's what you're depending on, then it's probably not going to be a very good season again. I don't know. I'm excited to see if he can continue to mash, you know, like continue to hit those bombs, because playing in that weird mini Yankee stadium probably helped him out a little bit, but at the same time, he's still Brandon Lau, like he still hits bombs. So excited to see him hit some more home runs in the hopefully rebuilt Tropicana Field. It's exciting that he's back. I'm happy that the Rays did this, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes for sure, because there's injury prone questions and there's still, you know, questions about his defense. But in terms of offensive production, I'm still fairly confident that he can be a very good contributor to this team.
One place that you can go and always be confident, never have questions, is shop.rblrsports.com. It's a place you can go anytime, in season or out of season, and get merchandise inspired by your favorite Tampa sports teams. Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, Sun, it's all there for you at shop.rblrsports.com. And you can use promo code Flappy, FLAPPY, for 10% off your entire order there. Shop.rblrsports.com, a place to go for consistency.
Indeed, you got to check it out. They got some great stuff for all Tampa Bay sports related stuff, man. You know, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So that's a place for you to make an addition. Some other additions that the Rays made, we'll get to Taylor Walls kind of at the end here, but some other additions that the Rays made, you mentioned it briefly, Jake Fraley brought in from most recently from Cincinnati. Actually, I don't believe it was most recently Cincinnati. He was in Cincinnati to begin the year, but then went to Atlanta. And he has been basically a league average offensive outfielder. for the last several seasons is right around 100 or a little bit below 100 as far as WRC plus is concerned, is a positive war player, but not by much. Clearly, a depth piece in the outfield, nonetheless, another name to throw into the outfield pot.
Yeah, man. I mean, Fraley's going to hit righties. You know, he's always hit right-handed pitching very, very well. Which isn't necessarily something the Rays struggled with. Like, you know, we always talked about, oh, it's a left-handed pitcher. Here's another loss for the Rays this past season. At least it felt like that. I know they ended up bouncing back a good bit in that way. But, he definitely mashes righties, or at least he has. We'll see if that continues. He's got an okay glove. You know, like you said, very, very interesting depth piece. So we'll see. But I really wanted to talk about that. Finally, remembered his name, Velade, from Velade. The Reds as well. They picked
that's
up.
That's where I was going next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm interested in him because he has hit really well. He hit really well in AAA last year. I think he had like almost a 300 batting average with 20 home runs. I know we're not a batting average podcast or whatever, but
it still matters.
It's a data point, not the data point, but. Yeah, he had a good season in AAA last year. I don't know. He still hasn't managed to break through in the majors, which is kind of concerning, especially because the Reds were putting Noel V. Marte in left field. So, you know, if they don't think that you can help in their corner outfield spot, then, you know, that's a bit concerning. But at the same time, it's also the Reds. They're not the Rays. They have a different way of scouting and looking at players. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on that, Zach. What do you think about Velade? Do you think about Ryan Velade from the Cincinnati Reds?
I do think about him. And I think about him kind of in the same place that I think about Everson Pereira. As young guys who clearly do have talent, like you mentioned, 17 home runs for Velade in 2025 in the minor leagues, came up for a very brief cup of coffee, 8 games, only 15 plate appearances, didn't do like literally anything at a negative 9 WRC plus, but was a plus batter everywhere he batted from 2024 to 2025. So that's nothing to sneeze at for sure. And again, I think there are openings right now in the Rays outfield. I would say that honestly, when you look at, you know, left field, at least for now, I think they're still going to let Josh Lowe, you know, go out there and lose the job to begin the season. And then I think you're going to have Johnny DeLuca be in center field at least to begin the season. But right field right now is an open competition in my mind between Christopher Morel, Everson Pereira, and now Ryan Velade, because again, it's a guy that, and I'm going to want to pronounce his name at some point, but it's a guy that, you know, you're bringing in that has offensive talent, has power, which was something that we desperately need in the outfield. You know, it's much maligned, but they had the fewest home runs in all of baseball as an outfield last season. Need to find a way to inject some power in there. And so the hope will be that he's the guy who gets it done. It was a second round pick originally back in 2027, so has some pedigree associated with his name. He's been in the minors for a while now. Hopefully he can make something happen here with the Rays, because we need somebody to make something happen. So I'm fine with the move. I'm okay with it. Unfortunately, I feel like we're just going to kind of have to be okay with it unless there is some bigger move in the wings when it comes to the outfield. Because right now, as far as we can see, it looks like our discussions around the outfield for 2026 are which of these guys can make something happen. Is it Richie Palacios, you know, getting out there? Is it Chandler Simpson just forcing his way into the lineup with how much he can get on base and steal bases? Does Morel finally figure it out from the power perspective? Just Josh Lowe bounce back? Is Johnny DeLuca healthy for a full season? Lots of questions there, almost no answers. That's kind of what the outfit looks like right now. And Ryan's just another question to be asked for the outfit. It's a good question. It's a question I'm happy to ask, but it's just another question. We don't have any answers in the outfield right now.
Yeah, man, it's brutal. You know, it's the whole lot of uncertainty on a team that for the past two seasons has not really had a whole lot of certainty in a lot of regards. So, it's been tough to watch that. That outfield was brutal last year. I mean, watching Jake Mangum run out there and Chandler Simpson and Cameron Meisner and just Stuart Fairchild didn't even play a game for him, but they traded for him. They tried to answer it with him.
Janikowski.
Yes. That's who I was thinking of. The long haired fella. A whole bunch of just like replacement level players, you know, and that's, I know Mangum played above replacement level or whatever technically, but he's a fourth outfielder at best. Like he's
yeah, he's a good fourth outfielder.
Very solid glove, but man, he is atrocious at the plate. Like just absolutely abysmal up there. Even more frustrating to watch for me than Taylor Walls, which is saying something because I absolutely hate watching Taylor Walls take at bats, but Mangum is even more frustrating. But yeah, so just like you said, whole lot of questions, not very many answers. The good news is Vlade, however the heck you pronounce his name, he was mashing in AAA last year. You know, he was hitting for quite a bit of pop. He was having, you know, the high exit velos and the high barrel rates and all that stuff. It's just a question of whether he can actually have a high enough hit tool in the majors to really put it all together because, you know, there's some swing and miss in his game. There's a little bit of chase in his game too, but he definitely has some pop. He's got some upside. So I definitely understand the Rays taking a flyer on him. It's a bit awkward because he doesn't have any options left. So I'll be interested to see how that develops to sort of see how that plays out, because if it doesn't work out for him, he could be gone pretty quick. I'm excited to see what he can do. But if this is the only thing that they do to address the corner outfield spot, I'm not expecting a whole lot to change.
So it remains to be seen. We'll get into it more as the offseason develops, but remains to be seen there. We'll talk about Taylor Walls to kind of round it out here, but just to kind of throw out some of the other moves that happened. It was a busy day on November the 6th for the Rays. In addition to the moves we've discussed and Taylor Walls getting his option exercised and adding a 2027 option, Forrest Whiteley was also given was also added to the major league roster, so they obviously think there's some value there with him. He's been okay in the moments that we've seen him. Nate Lavender and Brian Van Bell were reinstated from the 60-day and then DFA'd. We hope to get Lavender back. We don't know about Brian Van Bell. He was the trade piece that we received in the Zach Littell trade, so kind of an interesting decision there. The DFAs of Cameron Meiser and Bob Seymour, guys who did affect the major league roster. The expectation will be to find a way to get them back to Durham, but we'll see. And then to round it out, Alex Fieto and Stuart Fairchild and Caleb Bushley were declared waivers and elected free agency. So all those guys are out. The one that's the most interesting to me is Whiteley. He was a guy that, you know, seemed like there was a lot of buzz around him when he came in, has some kind of good stuff, and, you know, there's some hope to turn him into something. Didn't have the best results right away at the major league level when he came over, but he's a guy clearly the Rays believe in, even over some guys that, you know, we thought maybe more highly of throughout last season. Whiteley's the guy that stays, so it'd be interesting to see how he performs and if their faith in him is justified.
I'm stoked about Whiteley. I think he's going to be he's just another example of like the Rays just finding these. He's not even a hidden gem, really. He was a first round pick. Like, let's not get too crafty here. Like, the Rays didn't just pick up some random Joe Schmo off the street. Like, he was DFA'd by Houston, and, you know, the Astros just couldn't work him out. You know, they couldn't figure out what made him click, and the Rays seemed to unlock something because he showed some real flashes in the major league level as well as AAA. So I'm really excited to see him kind of turn into that high leverage arm this season. Him and Kevin Kelly are sort of the X factors. If they can have good seasons, I think the Rays have a real shot to have a very quality season because their bullpen will be nails. If both of them flail, if both of them don't pan out, it's not the end of the world or anything, but you know, it just puts a lot more pressure on those high leverage guys to continue to be good, because Garrett Clevinger was excellent last year. Is he able to replicate that season? He could, absolutely. But relief pitching is just so volatile because the sample sizes are so small, like you're working in very short spurts. So I don't know. I'm really excited by Whiteley. I'm glad they kept him around because his stuff is just electric, and he's kind of that traditional Rays pickup that's like, oh, how did they manage to pick him up? And then it's like, yeah, he's really good. So I'm excited to see him go to work for the Rays this year.
Yeah, that's a really good take about Kevin Kelly and Whiteley being kind of the X factors for the Rays bullpen. I like that. I think that's going to be something to watch for sure now, especially with Pete being moved on from putting that additional pressure on the kind of the upper echelon guys that we do have. I really like Kevin Kelly. I've liked him since we got him in Rule 5. I believe in this guy. I believe he'll turn it around. And if you could have Whiteley also doing kind of that and living up to the potential that we've, you know, that the Rays pitching staff has seen in him, that would be awesome. We need some guys stepping up, because as we'll discuss kind of more as we get into the offseason, there's some questions in regards to the starting pitching. So the bullpen has got to be nails. It's got to be something that's good for the Rays in 2026, but it's not something we traditionally have to worry about with the Rays. So pretty confident they'll make that happen. Yeah. So that brings us to the last major move that the Rays made. And it's one that I think I think Taylor Walls is going to may slowly overtake Brandon Lau as the most controversial Ray of all time. As Taylor Walls was reinstated from the 60-day, they exercised his 2026 club option and added a 2027 club option. Two more years of Taylor Walls.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. You know, like I get the logic behind it. Like I get that he's the best defensive shortstop in baseball, blah, blah, blah. Beat that horse to death, DRS and all that nonsense. I'm not doubting any of that. It still doesn't make him any better of a hitter. Like he's still one of the worst hitters that the Rays have in their lineup. And that's saying something, because the Rays were pretty, you know, they've got some stinkers. They've got some clunkers. So it's clearly the valuing the strength up the middle, you know, catcher, shortstop, and center. They all have to be good defensively. Totally understand that. And you kind of set aside their offensive production. If Taylor Walls was more of a likable dude, then I would actually kind of probably enjoy him. I would be like, hey, that's cool. Like, I love Taylor Walls. I'd be a Taylor Walls defender, but he seems like kind of a stick in the mud, to put it lightly. So I have no problem with people like being kind of illogical and saying, oh, Taylor Walls sucks. Like, why do they keep bringing him back? Like, he's an under 200 hitter. And it's like, you know, none of that really matters because of his defensive prowess, but also he seems like a jerk. So, you know, go for it, you know, keep talking crap on him. I almost dropped an expletive there, but I don't know. I don't
on a Sunday morning.
I just don't care for Taylor Walls as a person. So like any contributions that he makes as a baseball player are kind of null, but he also just happens to be like this kind of pulverizing figure in terms of like, oh, well, he's really good defensively, but good Lord, is he atrocious offensively. So people can't break through that. You know, they can't really grasp that notion. And I'm fine with it in this case, because like I said, yeah, it seems like a stick in the mud. Kevin Kiermaier I fought a little bit vehemently for, because like he's kind of a strange fellow with his weird stretching in the outfield and the weird blocking everyone on Twitter that replied to him. Oh, but I could at least like not like confidently say like, oh, he seems like a turd. Taylor Walls, I can confidently say he seems like a turd. So
well, I can what you know. All that being said, we can also confidently say that he is the best defensive shortstop in all of baseball.
Oh, 100%.
Yes. If you're looking for a stat to back that up, over the last two seasons, despite the fact that he has played by far the least amount of innings of like the top guys at shortstop, he has five more defensive runs saved over the last two seasons. The next closest guy is Zach Neto, who has played 1,000 more innings than he has.
Right.
So he is just far and away the best defensive shortstop in baseball. He breaks defensive metrics because, much like Kevin Kiermaier, like you mentioned, if you've ever watched him play shortstop in person, you will notice this.
Yeah,
it's not as noticeable. We've said it before. He makes movements and makes adjustments as the ball is contacting bat. He's so clearly the best defensive shortstop. And one of the things that I've said before, and I will continue to say, if the Rays outfield and rest of the infield are producing, I don't care if shortstop and catcher are swinging a wet noodle. I am fine with that. In some of the Rays' best years, they had, you know, the best offensive years even, you know, obviously there were some years where it was Wander out there, but they had some sort of subpar performances from their shortstops. They were kind of average. It was the Adani Echevarrias. It was some of these other guys who were okay at shortstop, but they weren't lighting the world on fire, but they were excellent defensively, and you had pop in the outfield and pop in the infield, and that allowed that to happen. So I think that that's what the Rays want to do with Taylor Walls. They want to be able to put him out there as Carson Williams is kind of getting ready and getting fully to the, you know, where he needs to be, and have pop in the outfield and the infield, which they've already invested in the pop in the infield, and they've got it with Yandy, Bilal, Aranda, and Junior. They've got that pop there. Where they need to figure out a way to get some offensive production is the outfield, because where the problem becomes, and what we saw last year, where the issues were when you have the great offensive production from your infield, but and you sort of are willing to look past the shortstop and catcher not producing, but the outfield wasn't producing. And that is what let the team down long term. Even when guys like Mangum were doing okay for their roles, there was other guys just were not pulling their weight at all. And that really hurt the team. So, again, I don't know how many games Taylor Walls will be starting in 2026. You know, as much, you know, nothing against Taylor Walls. I hope he doesn't start very many games. I hope Carson Williams plays well enough to where he is the starting shortstop.
Yeah.
Taylor Walls is kind of the ideal bench infielder. He can 100%. Play anywhere. He plays plus defense anywhere you put him on the infield. And he does have speed on the base pass, so he's a good pinch runner as well. So he would be the ultimate guy that comes off the bench to go in those moments, late defensive replacement, etc. He's perfect for that. Where we don't need to see him is swinging his 600 OPS bat up there, or maybe 500 OPS bat up at the plate, game in, game out. We don't need to see that unless we're getting such great production from the rest of the team that we're okay with that. So it's one of those two things has got to break. We either have to be getting, you know, better production from the outfield, or he needs to be sitting on the bench and Carson Williams needs to be in the game, because Carson Williams, you know, whatever else he may do, he will hit the ball hard. So one of those two things has to be there. If we're in a scenario again where the outfield's not producing and Taylor Walls is starting a lot of games, that's where I feel like we start to get in trouble.
Yeah, man. In my view, at least, it's sort of one of those things where if they are getting offensive production out of the corner outfield spots, if they're hitting well enough offensively in other spots, then yeah, let Taylor Walls start, because then they're probably winning some games. And true. Taylor Walls is the better option for them in the now than Carson Williams. I totally understand true. That. But if they're just rolling out, you know, Josh Lowe and Christopher Morel, and they both just continue their woeful ways, then play Carson Williams. You know, the season's going to be lost anyways. Yeah. You might as well see what Carson Williams can do at short. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where if Taylor Walls is playing a lot, that hopefully means that the Rays are winning. But if the Rays aren't winning, then stop playing him. You know, just utilize him in that super utility role, or I don't know, maybe see if he has more trade value to another team, which I frankly doubt, but, you know, whatever. Now that he's making actual baseball money, maybe the Rays will actually trade him. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not super excited by this, but I'm also not going to like grab the pitchforks or anything. I just wish Taylor Walls wasn't on this team. He's just hard to root for, you know, like he's not a likable fella, it seems like. So it's, you know, whatever, but we'll see how it goes.
As we're wrapping up, we got a comment from Byford the Hobbit, I think. Any news on the indoor stadium ready for 2026? Great question. What we know right now is the Trop is on track to be open in 2026. We do not know if it will be ready to start the season. The repairs on the Trop are ongoing. You're seeing updates pretty regularly on the panels being put back on and seeming to be in good shape. So we expect the Trop to be played in 2026. We are not sure if it will be ready at the beginning. There are some, I believe the Rays schedule has been adjusted to start on the road in order to allow for a little more time to get the Trop ready. We'll see how that goes. But that is kind of where we are right now. It's a great question, but I do believe we'll be playing games in the Trop in 2026.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. I drive by it a lot for work, and those panels are weird. They're funky, but, you know, it's kind of fun to see the development from, like, the skeleton to, like, now. So, yeah, hopefully we'll be watching games in Tropicana Field next year. And I can't imagine that any setback would happen, but, you know, knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Appreciate the comment. And if you want to get your comments in and want to talk to us, we'd love to hear from you. The easiest way to do that is to go over to YouTube, drop us a subscribe while you're over there. Helps us a whole bunch. It's free. But drop a comment in there as well. We'd love to hear from you guys. We're going to be here all offseason. We've got a lot to discuss as the offseason goes on. We're going to be doing player reviews. We're going to be talking about the free agent news as it comes by. Maybe the Rays will sign Kyle Tucker. Who knows? It's anything could happen. It's literally anything could happen. Probably not that, but anything could happen, and we hope it will happen. And we hope that if that does happen, if we do see a signing of Kyle Tucker, that you'll all be here to join us for that.
Heck yeah. If Kyle Tucker signs with the Rays, I'll do something crazy. I'll buy someone a $100. I'll send someone $100 to spend in the RBLR store or something. Like, I don't know.
Heard it here first. And, yeah. And you're going to want to be here, right here on the RBLR Rays show, if that happens. And the easiest way to do this, like we said, to subscribe. We hope you're going to be here all season long with us, all off season long, because regardless of whatever weird moves go on, it's always going to be Rays up right here.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.